You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details. Welcome to the Mash Those Buttons Show, where we cover the latest in games, community, culture, and everything in between. This week, PS3, PSP, and Vita stores are closing, Microsoft is looking to buy Discord, and Reggie is leaving GameStop. This is episode number 44 for the week of March 28th, 2021. I am Jared, but you can call me Ja, and I am here with the games industry public defender and the scourge of Ironforge, Nick Zelenkevich.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
And also here with my friend and co-host of Night City Stories and, well, main host of Warcraft Reloaded, my friend Bobby Schisler, also known as Blazing Bob.
Hey, Ja, thanks for having me on. I love this show and I'm excited for the opportunity to come on and talk to you guys.
Oh, yeah, I just brought you on so you can argue with Nick real quick and then you can go about your business.
Hey, man, I'm here for whatever you need me for.
I don't need you for anything.
Yes, I'd like to welcome our first-time listeners. Thank you very much for taking the time to check out the Mash Those Buttons show. And also like to give a thank you and a welcome back to our returning listeners. So what's everybody's been up to? Let's start with Bob. Bob is our guest here. So how's your week been, Bob?
My week's been overwhelming, to be honest. I'm a big time gamer. I play a lot of games, but you know, after the last 2 years, I've been playing a lot of WoW Classic, and the Burning Crusade beta came out, and it's been a little overwhelming for me. I had forgotten really how much of the game changes from vanilla to the Burning Crusade, and I mean, it changes a ton. So I've been just trying to learn and figure out everything that's new and trying to test and been streaming a lot too. So I'm talking to chat. It's just been kind of overwhelming, to be honest.
And how about you, Nick? What you been up to?
Just WoW. I've been trying to burn through the Kyrian campaign so I can get that down. But Hearthstone, they made a change to Hearthstone that actually surprised me. They have the system where you, at 500 wins and 1,000 wins, you get different appearances for your different characters. And so I've been tracking that very closely. I have a spreadsheet. I have the formulas figured out to estimate when I'm going to hit all the different milestones based on my current rate of play. And they made a change where, like, I guess they had tracked some wins that you had in, I think, like Arena or some different systems that they weren't including, but they now were able to include that. So all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I got a whole bunch of wins. And I'm like, oh, this messes up all my formulas now. So,
aren't they doing a Hearthstone Classic? I heard something about that at BlizzCon.
Yes, there is it's live now. There's a classic mode where they have the original cards with, I think, most of their original values. There were some nerfs and buffs that they were like, no, these make too much sense for us to revert. But there are some other changes that they since, you know, made as the game evolved that they all walked back. And so You go in there, you play the cards as they were. I wish I could say it was the same experience for me as it was then, but the problem is that now I have a whole bunch of legendaries and other cards that I didn't have then. Like, I remember every time somebody played Ragnaros, I'm like, oh, I want Ragnaros. Why don't I have Ragnaros? And now it's like I have Ragnaros, and it's like, It's no big deal. So I can't get that classic experience back because I have all the cool cards now. But back then, I did not, and I sucked.
Yeah, well, one of the things I liked about early Hearthstone as opposed to late is the rush decks get a lot of value early on, and can't wait to play my Leroy Jenkins again. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll definitely have to check that out.
Well, that's one of the huge things is, like, ever since they introduced Rush, they've kind of, like, tried to get rid of Charge, and the final nail in the coffin was they got rid of Stone Tusk Boar. And, so that's gone. And also there was the one, Murloc that had Charge. They finally got rid of those two. They replaced them with cards, same value, but they rush now. And yeah, if you want to play those cards, including Leroy, they're all back in that classic set. You can go build the old decks. I saw somebody, I think was his name Zetalot or somebody, one of the Hearthstone theory crafters. People are like, why haven't you posted any good decks for Classic? He's like, I did 7 years ago.
Nice.
Go check out my stuff from then. So, I mean, yeah, that's all there. You can go have fun with all the busted stuff. I think Rogue was in a particularly overpowered state back then, so go play that. But it's all fun.
Well, now that we put Jaw to sleep.
Yeah, I haven't not even so much as even hovered over the button to play Hearthstone. So, yeah, that is one area that I do not know anything about. But one thing I do know about is It Takes Two, because I played that this weekend with Kurabara. We actually played it. We actually live streamed it last night, to be honest with you. We thought it was going to be a shorter game, but we played 7 hours of it, and I'm pretty sure we still have a good 3 to 4 hours left of the game.
Yeah, I watched actually some of your VODs, because I had to pull my VOD down to be able to put it up on YouTube, and I was like, what is this? So
yeah,
it looked pretty fun.
It is a fun game. It's a weird game, too. It's kind of dark, to be honest with you, in unexpected ways. Like, they don't even... And I think the thing that makes it a little darker is that they really don't even, like, highlight that it's being, like, kind of dark. Like, so one of the enemies in the beginning... So, first of all, the premise of the game is that, you know, you are actually two adults. You are married. You're going to get divorced. Your daughter finds out. She cries about it on these dolls that she made. And you turn into the dolls, essentially. Like, your souls get trapped in the dolls. So, now you're running around as dolls, and it's a co-op game. It's one of those games... It's the same people who made A Way Out. Like, you cannot play without a second human. There is no AI assistance at all. You have to have a second person to play.
Can you choose your name?
What do you mean, can you choose your name?
I mean, do you have to name your character? Because if you
no.
do... See, that's a bummer. Because if you did, there'd be one right answer. I'm sure Nick could get this.
Stupid? According to his face.
Chucky. Stupid? Chucky, dolls taken by someone else's soul. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Is this the people that also did Brothers?
I don't know. I don't think so. No, okay, I don't think so. So the first boss we fight is this vacuum that the husband vacuumed up stuff he wasn't supposed to vacuum, so he broke it. And the wife is an engineer, and she said she was going to fix it. But then she never fixed it. So the vacuum is pissed at both of you because, one, you didn't fix it, and two, you sucked up all of that shit that broke it. But when you beat the vacuum, you take its own hands, which are the suction things, and you put it on its eyes, and you suck its insides out and make it throw up its own insides, essentially.
Ugh.
Which is, like, pretty dark. So, yeah, it got dark. There's, like, a blood feud between, like, squirrels and the wasps in the tree outside, and you got to deal with that. Then you figure out that you need to make your daughter cry again, and that they'll break the spell. And so you go on a quest to kill her favorite toy. Oh yeah. It's rough, man.
I just want to see I just want to see Kurabara's face during these different interactions.
Oh yeah. I wish I would have put his camera on, because I don't want to get into what happens when you finally get to the toy. Like it was bad. It was creepy. I was like, wow, I feel it wasn't nice. So but the thing is, it's a great game. The game itself is really good, and the mechanics constantly change. Like, so in the part where you're in the tree, one person gets a gun where they can shoot sap, and the other person has to shoot it with these things, with this gun that lights matches, essentially. So one person, like, will sap up enemies, and the other person has to basically do the killing, you know? And you also, like, in the place where the, like, you have to go into the magic castle, and it turns into basically a dungeon crawler. Like, it turns into, like, Diablo at that point, which is actually pretty cool. So they did a great job with it, and it's a pretty lengthy game. I think it's $40, but it comes with a friend pass, so only one person has to buy it. The other person just needs to download the game, and then you can play it. Kind of like Wolfenstein. Wolfenstein was like that, too, where only one person needed to buy it, and then use the buddy pass to get your other friend to play the full game, you know. They just can't initiate games
for couples, too, you know.
I'd say so, but the game is about fucking divorce.
I was gonna say, it's cheaper than couples therapy. Do you think that the developers, whoever wrote the script, probably needs to see someone about, you know, where they are in life right now? Like,
I'm curious. Cause I already told Corral, I was like, yo, if they give us an option at the end of the game to say whether we're going to stay together or stay apart, I'm like, we're staying apart because these people need to be far away from each other. They're fucking dangerous, man.
Sounds like they need to get away from their daughter. Like, she should be in some kind of school for the gifted or something if she could cry and turn people into dolls. That's
what was that movie back in the 90s where the couple, like, wouldn't get a divorce? Like, the wife ended up cooking the dude's dog and feeding it to him. What was that
movie? Fatal Attraction, maybe?
No, it wasn't Fatal Attraction, but it was around that time, though.
She cooked
it. I forget what it was. But it was gross. It was just like, when it's time to break up, it's time to break up.
Yeah, I do not recall. So, yeah, let's go ahead. We're going to go ahead and move on to our topics. Before we do that, though, I would like to give a special thanks to our Patreons or our patrons. Thank you guys very much for supporting the Mash Those Buttons Network and the Mash Those Buttons Show. And also give a big shout out to our Twitch subscribers over at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. You can follow that if you want to know when we go live and play great stuff like It Takes Two or when Bob goes live with Warcraft Reloaded. And if you also want to follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/themashnetwork, you can do that as well. And we do have a Discord at mash.gg/discord. We can join me, Nick, Bob, and our communities over in our Discord and come and play some games or just talk about the different games we play. All right. Okay. All right. So first up, PlayStation is closing the PS3, PSPs, and Vita stores. This is an article from CBR.com. And it says, according to the Gamer, sources indicate that PS3 and PSP stores will close on July 2nd. And with the PS Vita store following suit on August 27th, an official announcement is expected by the end of March. I know this did definitely ruffle some feathers, though, because people are like, conservation. Like, there are people that I know. I do understand that now the PS3 is two generations behind, but there are still people who do play PS3. You know, they still do play on their PS3, or they do want to access those games. There's people who keep consoles around just so they can play older games that they may not be able to get on older consoles, or newer consoles, I should say. I mean, shit, I have a PS2 in this house right now that does work, because I swear to God, I am going to beat Zone Avengers 2. I am.
This actually
brings up... I am going to beat Zone Avengers 2. Like, it's going to happen. So I still have my PS2, and it is fully functional.
It actually brings up something very scary to me, because, like, the PSP and the PS3, I'm not as worried about, because there's a lot of physical media out there. But Vita only had... Like, you could only download games, and it kind of freaks me. Okay, sorry.
There were two versions of the Vita. There were two versions. There was a download-only one, and there was one that had, chip games, like kind of like the Switch does.
Well, what freaks me out, though, is I'm thinking about it now, and I haven't bought a physical copy of a game since the Xbox One launched, and exactly. I haven't bought a physical copy of a computer game either. This is kind of scary just thinking about, because I do sometimes pull up my old Nintendo 64 and play Super Smash Brothers, and that's something that's just going to die with the new way that we do things. That's kind of freaky. I'd never thought about it.
The problem the problem that you run into is whenever there's any kind of like authentication, like, oh, before I let you access your games, I got to check in with a server, and then you can do that. And I think the PS4 does that, where it won't let you just like play the games offline. And that's the thing. I'm worried about that. Like, when my PS4 should, die. I mean, I talked the other week about having to open it up for the first time here. But even then, like, I still use my PS3. I play it with my son, and, he plays, Little Big Planet on there for him not too long ago. So he's been playing that on there, and I have, Super Puzzle Fighter. Turbo 2, whatever the full name of that was. I still play that on my PlayStation 3. Your
Turbo Graphic 16, you probably still pull out from time to time, right?
Well, no, but...
Nobody remembers that, do they?
I remember the Turbo Graphic 16. I just didn't have one. Yeah. I didn't get cool until I could get a PlayStation 2. I was always going to other people's houses back for those generations, but... No, I mean, is like Puzzle Fighter even on another console, or was the last one the PS3? Because, I mean, I don't play it often, but I still bust it out and play it. I have it, set up in my basement for a reason. So I am, I'm not looking forward to this because at some point that console is going to die. And when it goes, all those games go with it. And like, I can't get them back.
Right. I think that's the big problem with the digital only thing, right? Where once a store closes, I mean, technically speaking, you can still play the game if you have it, but what if you don't have it anymore? Like, you know, what if you have to like wipe the drive or you have to re-download it? You won't be able to re-download it anymore. I know with Steam, and this came up a long time ago, so this may have changed, but when Steam obviously was first, you know, starting out, people were really like, well, what happens when Steam goes away? Like, how am I supposed to get my games in? I think Valve said that they have a system in place where if Steam were to ever shut down, they would just basically detach all the games, essentially, right? Like, they would send one, their last update would be to that the games no longer have to authenticate versus their authentication. So I don't know if that's the case anymore. They said that
years ago, though.
That was like, a long time ago.
They're way bigger now.
Oh, yeah, they're significantly way bigger. But, Valve has always been... Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say they're for the people, but at the same time, they're very consumer. They are kind of consumer centric, which is frustrating to a degree, but to the point that they spend a ton of time and money trying to get games to work on Linux, even, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, they do. So, I think they still would, but like, you know, when you have something like the PlayStation stores like this, those games are going to be gone forever if you don't have them downloaded. And eventually, and actually I think there was another problem that the way the games work on the PS3 is if your CMOS clock isn't working properly, then they also won't work.
Right.
Or what that has some, I forget, I can't remember the details, but it has something to do with the CMOS battery. Not
if PS3 like, and PS4.
Oh yes. Okay. So if like the CMOS battery goes out, which I mean they do,
you'd have to switch to a new console. And if the store's gone, good luck on that new console getting your stuff back. It's
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I understand Sony's position that, like, you can't support these indefinitely. Like, at some point, the number of people out there using a PS3 is going to be in the, just a handful. I mean, really just the archivists and the hardcore, you know, like, retro gamers. I don't think we're there yet, mind you. But, like, you know, like, at some point, you do need to sunset these systems. But it's just, is somebody, you know, still fairly invested in the PS3? You know, I'd feel a lot different about, like, well, not that the PS2 had a store, but, like, okay, like you said, your PS2 still gets used. Mine is, you know, boxed in a way. Like, if they shut down anything related to that, I'd be like, oh, that's sad. But, like, no, I still, I'm very much affected by this, even though I haven't actually purchased anything off the PS3 store in a while. If anything, this benefits me because now it's one less way for my kid to hit a few buttons when I'm not looking and spend my money. So, really, maybe I should take a more optimistic approach.
Now, I feel like in these cases, it would actually save some face if before they sunset the console, they maybe release some type of modding tools or something for the modding community out there so that it basically put it back into the hands of the community. But like, look, we're not dealing with this anymore here, you know, we're relinquishing responsibility of this. But because the way, you know, companies hold on to IP so tightly, you know, they're not going to do that, but that would be a tremendous help. You know, if there was another way to set up maybe like a repository for those games, if you were, you know, if you're going to need them or something like that. So.
I think ideally, and maybe we're seeing a bit of this, maybe beginning with the PS5 a little bit, but ideally they should somehow let you roll everything over to the next generation. So you just have your PlayStation account. It has these games on it and they all play on the current system. And I know there's a lot of technical hoops to jump through because good luck getting, you know, Puzzle Fighter, whatever version of Puzzle Fighter 2 was on the PS3. Good luck getting that to work on the PS5. Like I know there's some, you know, it's not just a matter of getting an emulator going and doing that, but damn it, get an emulator going, get that figured out.
Yeah, they do end up. I mean, that's what the Xbox did for you to play 360 games. They basically built the OS of the 360 in the Xbox One, and you boot that up before you actually boot up the game itself.
It's a little bit more complicated than that. But I will say this with Microsoft versus Sony. With Microsoft making OSs, they have a lot of expertise, and a lot of people working on application virtualization. Right. As a matter of fact, they're so the Windows platform that typically all of your programs use in Windows is Win32. There's another one called I think, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, somebody who actually does like work in Windows, I think it's called Unified Windows Platform. And that's what a lot of the games that you play from the Microsoft Store work on. And that's actually a virtual, well, I'm oversimplifying it, but it's kind of like a virtualization platform. So when I first started playing Forza Horizon 3, I bought it on Xbox Anywhere. So I could play it on both my Xbox One and my PC at the time. And I was having trouble with the game starting up and crashing. I'm like, ah, Microsoft, you know, shaking my fist. But turns out the problem was actually with my antivirus because of the way it was scanning the application. That's how I found out that it was a virtualized application. It was actually sandboxed. And I had to do something to my antivirus to get it working. And that was actually causing the problem. So when I started looking into it, it looks like that's how they were making the games work on both platforms, essentially. So to kind of come back around to this, Microsoft has just way more experience when it comes to the different methods you can use for backward compatibility. Like the backward compatibility from PS3 to PS2 required hardware, you know, actually required hardware, which they removed to bring the price down of the PS3. It's funny because, you know, when Microsoft always talks about backward compatibility, you hear people, oh, who cares about playing old games? And now Sony's getting ready to start. It's like, oh my God, my old games, you know, and Microsoft, I think they just have a better handle on the matter. Now, I do think going forward, this is going to be less of a problem. I think when it came to the Xbox One going into the Xbox Series, they were better prepared for backward compatibility. There's, when we talked about last week, there's still a backward compatibility hurdle with the PS5, because Psyonix was saying that in order to get Rocket League to work with certain features, they would have to completely rebuild the game. That means it's not backward compatible, you know? So yeah, I think going from the PS5 to the PS6 or whatever comes next for Sony, I think we're going to have a much smoother transition for software, and it's going to become less and less of a problem. But for now, that's another feather in Microsoft's cap right there. You know, but they're missing the biggest feather, which is first-party titles. So we're just going to keep moving on there. But yeah, so that is a little sad. I'm actually going to fire up my Vita. I still have one, and make sure I download all my games. Yeah, that's going to be that. I have a PSP too. I might fire that up and make sure I just download everything there just because. Who knows?
I don't know. Who knows? Microsoft's getting better at like first party titles. I mean, Sea of Thieves is a Microsoft title, and it's doing pretty good, but they're just buying up companies, you know?
Yeah, that's the best idea that they've had in years.
Definitely.
Yeah, like this is like, okay, well, these people are already making great games, let's just buy them. Okay, we have money, right? Yeah, right there. Yeah. So
as long as Microsoft doesn't name anything, because they suck at naming things.
They do suck at naming things. So they really do it. That's probably their weakest, so next to not having good first party titles for now, which
come on
apparently is going to change soon.
Name me one title that sucks.
Xbox One Network.
Did you see what I did there? Did you see what I did there? Sorry.
Yeah.
This is a bad joke. My bad.
Okay. So let's go ahead and move on. Now we're actually going to talk about Microsoft. Microsoft is rebranding Xbox Live to the Xbox Network. And this article is from The Verge. It says Microsoft is rebranding Xbox Live to the Xbox Network. Instances of the new branding started appearing in the Xbox dashboard recently for beta testers, with clips being uploaded to Xbox Network instead of Xbox Live. Microsoft now has confirmed the name change. Xbox Network refers to the underlying Xbox Online service, which was updated in the Microsoft Services Agreement, says a Microsoft spokesperson in a statement to The Verge. The update from the Xbox Live to Xbox Network is intended to distinguish the underlying service from Xbox Live Gold memberships. Microsoft has used Xbox Live to refer to its underlying service since the original launch 18 years ago. Harry Lib, better known as Major Nelson, has been known as Xbox Live's Major Nelson for years. But I say Harry Lib. It's yes, Larry.
Larry Herb. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been saying his name wrong for years.
Oh my gosh.
Well, now's your chance since he's got to rebrand his Xbox Networks, Major Nelson. Now you can say it correctly.
I'm sorry, Larry. You're Harry now. Okay. Okay, Harry. We got it.
Are we Parks and Recreation now?
Yeah. He now refers to himself as Xbox's Major Nelson. I think they're clearly trying to get away from that Xbox Live subscription, because I think that's why he raised that price, to get people off of that and get people to go to Games Pass instead. I don't expect for the service, like for that Xbox lifestyle service, to be completely free, because honestly, I think it's one of the reasons why Microsoft has been able to outpace Sony when it comes to network games for so long. The PSN has never matched Xbox Live. I'm sorry, PlayStation users. And I have all the consoles, and I played primarily on my PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4. And it ain't no Xbox Live, I will tell you that much.
Yeah, I mean, Xbox Live changed the game when they came out. I mean, I remember I was working at Best Buy during the time, and I was trying to tell everybody, this is the future right here. And it really was. And then the PlayStation Network also had their woes where they went down for months. And, you know, hashtag that's when they never got forget.
Yeah, that's when they got hacked. Yeah. I knew I think I've told this story before, but I've been within like grasping distance of the PlayStation Network servers on the East Coast. And in my opinion, that's not a good thing. But I've been able to get that close to those servers.
Was it around the time that they were hacked?
No. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely trying to get rid of that Xbox Live, like, kind of like gold, silver service. I mean, I think they raised the price and they lowered it because people were super pissed about it. But the free-to-play games will no longer require the Xbox Live gold service. I forget what games you actually need to have that gold service for at this point. I think you can have just silver service to play multiplayer games at this point.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I can't remember what the Xbox Live Gold service is actually for, besides the games for Xbox. You know, like, you get those free games every month, that copy of PlayStation Plus, which was never as good. So there you go. There's something for Sony. But yeah, I mean, I don't mind the name change. They are kind of evolving, especially because, you know, they are trying to get Xbox services onto other platforms, you know. They're trying to get Xbox services on other platforms. So, and, you know, Xbox is more than just games. You know, you can also buy TV shows and stuff like that. I think you still can buy TV shows and stuff like that. I think they stopped that on PlayStation, though.
You can't do that on PlayStation. They did stop that on PlayStation because nobody bought it on PlayStation. Why would you buy it on PlayStation?
I used to buy my TV shows on Xbox. I used to buy Xbox Live TV shows. Like,
not on PlayStation.
Not on PlayStation, yeah. Yes, correct.
Yeah. Yeah, I buy all of my shows and movies on the Xbox platform just because I have an Xbox in, like, every room, so it makes it easy to watch whatever I want. So I own a bunch of movies and a good handful of shows on the Xbox network.
I think this is that this ties in perfectly to us. I know it's a story I've told before. Nick has heard the story before. I don't know if Bob has ever heard the story before. And if you're a new listener, welcome to my story that I've told before. at some point. But so I had Xbox Live since day one.
Same.
Day one, I had Xbox Live. Okay. So this, I had to call Microsoft because, like I said, I used to buy TV shows on the Xbox, on Xbox, and I bought an episode of Fringe, not Friends, Fringe, on the Xbox. Right? Nick is shaking his head. I know he knows this story.
I do know this story. Right now. Although, I'll admit, I thought it was an X-Files episode, not Fringe. But I mean, I can see why I would get those two shows confused. They're kind of, they have some similarities. But anyway.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So the thing about it, about 35 minutes into the show, it just cuts out. It just blanks out, like it stops. There's something wrong with the video. So I call Xbox Live support. The guy is going through his steps. He's trying to get me through, you know, getting the video to work and stuff like that. And he's like, okay, well, let me, he sends a message to, I guess, somebody else higher up on the support tier. Waiting to hear back from him. He was like, hey, can I ask you a question? I'm like, yeah, you can ask me a question. What's up? He's like, hey, I see that you've had Xbox Live since the day it came out. I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, what did you do before Xbox Live? I was like, oh. So I just kind of told him. I was like, yeah, we used to use a thing called the GameSpy Arcade Tunnel, and I used to have to go make, like, basically a VPN tunnel from my computer, you know, to somebody else's computer, yep. And that's how we would play Xbox over the internet. That's Halo. How we used to play Halo online.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah, I did it a bunch.
Oh, yeah, the GameSpy Tunnel. Shout out, like, RIP GameSpy. They had so many good multiplayer services. So many good multiplayer services. Completely demolished by Steam. Holy shit. If you want to talk about a Steam casualty, GameSpy. The GameSpy was a Steam casualty. But man, he's just listening to me. I feel like an old man, like at a campfire, just telling, like, fucking, you know, gaming war stories. Cause God, when was Xbox Live first come out? Like, what year was that?
Dude, it was
2003.
Yeah, it was it was before I ever moved to Los Angeles, and I moved to Los Angeles in 2005. And I remember I worked at Best Buy prior when the Xbox was coming out. There was this program that you could join as a retail employee. So I got to play the Xbox and all the games at this bar that they opened up here in Kansas City. Like, we went for an entire day and played all the games before they came out, got to play on the Xbox. It was, and we could also, we would do these little tests and stuff, and then we could, like, actually redeem Xbox games or controllers and stuff like that. I forget what it was, but it was like a retail, because they wanted you to be knowledgeable about the games and the system.
Now I can say it now that it's over. Did you know that if you got your Xbox Live subscription through that program, there was a problem with the system that gave you free Xbox Live for years? I did not have to pay for Xbox Live for 8 years, dude. I didn't pay for Xbox Live for 8 fucking years. I can say it because it's over now.
Okay, well, that's who I got it through. I guess, like, maybe I just never checked my... Like, I just had my credit card attached to it, and I don't even see, you know, when my, like, WoW subscriptions come out. So maybe it was free for me, too, and I had no idea.
Yeah, like, I know exactly what program you're talking to, because I worked at Best Buy around the same time. And what he's talking about, guys, is a program where you can go to the Microsoft retail website, you take these tests about the games that they gave you the answers to, and you got points, and you traded the points in for games. And they would ship the games to you. It was fucking great. Microsoft was the greatest back then.
Dude, and it made sense because they wanted you to be knowledgeable about their products so that you could sell it better. And I thought I was the coolest dude ever because I'm just going, I'm like playing this, you know, console months before it comes out. I mean, it was so cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, man, good times back then. But that's all gone now because the Xbox Network and not Xbox Live anymore.
one little add-on to that is you're talking about having old shows and stuff. I was looking at my shows that I have on the Xbox platform, and I've got the very first few episodes of Punk'd. And I watched those the other day, and I was like, man, this show was awesome, dude. Like, this show was great.
Oh, man. The reminiscent cast.
So we're confident, though, because, I mean, there's been plenty of instances of companies trying to change their branding. In particular, this reminds me of when Blizzard tried to change the Battle.net launcher to the Blizzard launcher. And that lasted
that was a lot of controversy.
Not even a year, and then it went back to being Battle.net.
I don't think people are going to cause problems about this changing.
This will last, you think. This one's going to stick.
I think the crowd's different. Yeah. I think the crowd that plays World of Warcraft or the much larger crowd that uses Xbox Live, I think much less people will care. That's just my personal opinion and guess.
More Microsoft news. Microsoft is in talks to acquire Discord. And this article is from Ars Technical. It says Microsoft is reportedly in the late stages of a $10 billion acquisition talks with Discord, a gaming-focused community chat platform. According to unnamed people familiar with the matter who spoke to Bloomberg, Discord reportedly has over 140 million users and 300 million registered accounts. In December, the company raised $140 million at an implied valuation of $7 billion, according to TechCrunch, and more than doubling its valuation in under a year. Also, there was an article from The Verge where they want to talk about why Microsoft is trying to acquire Discord. And my answer is Microsoft's just trying to eat everybody right now. But still, they say that Microsoft has clearly been on the hunt for the same type of creator-led community on the consumer side, but TikTok and Pinterest didn't work out. The software maker has also failed elsewhere. Microsoft acquired Beam a couple years after Nadella was named CEO, but eventually rebranded it to its Mixer streaming service. Microsoft tried to compete with Twitch, but ultimately failed because it didn't have the broad consumer reach. Instead, it shut down Mixer last year and helped transition streamers over to Facebook Gaming. Discord offers Microsoft a big and engaged community, primarily used by gamers. It has become the Gen Z hub for socializing with friends, particularly during the pandemic. It consists predominantly of private communities, and Discord has 6.7 million active servers every single day. It's a huge community, 75% of which are Discord users outside of North America.
I mean, we're using Discord right now.
Yeah, we're using Discord right now, yeah.
Or as I like to call it, Teams Gamer Edition.
No, I would call it Slack Gamer Free Edition.
Well, yeah, that's what it is. I mean, Discord and Slack kind of came up around the same time, and they work pretty similarly. They both use Electron for your desktop applications. Like, they're pretty similar applications, and they both kind of jack their style from IRC. Except it's easier to get around than IRC. It's more centralized, you know.
What if they rebrand?
Huh?
I was going to say, the last time I used MIRC, did they change it at some point? I last used it during Ultima Online, then stopped it when I started there, WoW. Right?
Your IRC experience depended on how you accessed it, like, because you didn't have to use the MIRC client. You could use another client to access MIRC or access IRC.
Oh, okay.
And for those who are just too young to remember or weren't on the internet at the time, IRC stands for Internet Relay Chat. That's what it is. And that's how communities used to organize between forums and IRC.
You would tell the people over at MIRC what the numbers were for your GameSpy tunnel.
Yeah.
We also had ICQ, too, back in the day.
That was for the cool kids.
We used to organize scrims and everything, and I feel like now, in order to make like a scrim bot, like, you have to know how to make an entire bot in Discord. Before, it was just a script, right? Like, you just set a certain command and it ran the script. But now you have to know how to make like a bot in order to get it to work in Discord. So it actually, in my opinion, it was a bit easier to automate things. But like I said, we used to organize scrims, we would organize pugs, everything in IRC. And then if you needed something a bit more long form, you just go to a forum, you know. I mean, Discord kind of takes care of that, even though Discord really isn't a great for long form mess. It's not great for long form messaging, you know, like if you need to make a post or something. That's where Slack beats it. Slack actually has a posting feature, which I don't know, they might put in the Discord. It'll be a good idea for them to put in a Discord if they could. But I mean, I think Microsoft buying it, this will put them farther ahead in the network game, to be perfectly honest with you, because we all know that Microsoft is really focused on cross-platform gaming, right? They want Xbox everywhere. So now, if they take Discord and integrate it with the Xbox, now players who are playing on Xbox can just hop natively into Discord versus what they have to do now, which is like kind of, I don't know. I don't even know how they do it now, how Xbox players, because sometimes Xbox players do hop into Discord.
You use your phone.
Yeah, that's kind of clunky, you know what I'm
definitely
saying? But now they can just kind of hop into Discord and you can play like Apex Legends together. You can play Fortnite together. You know, you can do all these things together. So
it sounds to me like they could rebrand Discord to be Xbox Live.
Why?
It does worry me about monetization, though, because that's been the big question. Like, where does Discord make money besides Nitro? Like, I've subscribed to Nitro for a long time.
Nitro. Apparently, they make a lot of money on Nitro. Really? Like, apparently they do make a good amount of money on Nitro. So,
I mean, you do get a lot of cool benefits. Like, I could use an emote from any server in any server, unless that server prohibits it in those chats. And I can I could move larger, like I could send larger files via Discord because of it. And there are some, and then I could also boost other servers, which is kind of like you're subscribing to that that Discord server. So, I mean, it does have some benefits. I was curious how many people actually subscribe to that.
Well, if Microsoft, if Microsoft buys Discord, I would imagine that they'd make Nitro part of the Games Pass service. Okay. They'd probably integrate the Discord store and with the Microsoft store, which means when you buy a game on the Discord store, you're going to buy it across platforms now. Since people have Discord open, it now makes Discord a launcher. That puts pressure on Steam. They do this, they're actually putting pressure on Steam that Epic cannot. Because
that's a good point.
Steam is a social hub. Steam is a good, like, for example, I don't buy games on the Epic Store, not because I'm against the Epic Store, but because I forget I have games on the Epic Store. I have not beaten Outer Worlds because I totally forget about it. And then I'll just be like in the shower one day, I'm like, oh shit, I have Outer Worlds. I should go play that. You know, like that's how I remember it. But like the only game I'm pretty sure the only game I've actually completed on the Epic Store was Control. I didn't even finish Borderlands 3 because I forget I have it. I forget I fucking have it. You know? It
sounds to me like what you need is some way you can play games in the shower.
But dude, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if Microsoft integrates their store in with Discord and the Games Pass now also includes a Nitro boost, you know, you get Discord Nitro. Yeah, like that. I think that actually puts a decent amount of pressure on Steam. Because so I was already buying stuff on the Microsoft store because I'm like, dude, if I can get this game from my Xbox and my PC, why would I buy it on Steam? You know, I bought Forza 3 like that. I bought Forza 4 like that. I bought ReCore like that. You know, I bought Ori like that. So like that's the thing. Like I think it's a good move if they actually do it. I think it's a good move. In my opinion, it puts pressure on Steam. And normally, first of all, I would say it's a good thing regardless. But the thing about Steam, like they don't feel pressure. It's kind of do what they want. Even though I think they did feel a little pressure from the Epic Game Store and they opened that Steam Labs thing where they have the experimental stuff that Steam does, which works out. Like those little 6-second trailer things they have, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if they... If people really realize that's where that came from, because now when you hover over like an icon, it shows you the 6-second trailer that shows you all the best shit, and it's like, yeah, I'll buy that. Yeah, that's cool. That looks good to me.
I mean, one worry that I do have though is, I don't know if you guys experience this, but anything Microsoft, I often have a hard time navigating through their stuff. Like the new Xbox client that's on the PC, I have a hard time navigating through that. I have a hard time like telling people where to like subscribe to Office Home, you know, 365, because there's so many different websites and I'm like, well, I think you go to this to log in. Like I was helping my dad with it the other day and I find a lot of their systems clunky, and I hope that they keep Discord as user friendly as it is, because it is user friendly. Like I've been able to work with Discord and really find everything that I need with ease normally with changing settings, with even making servers. So I'm hoping that Microsoft doesn't put their Microsoft touch on it, if so to speak.
I doubt it. Like, there's no reason for them to do that, you know?
True.
There's no reason. I don't think there's really any reason for them to do that. I mean, people look at Skype. They use Skype as an example. As look what Microsoft did, look what they did to my boy, you know.
Skype kind of sucked anyway, though. We just used it because we had nothing better.
Exactly. But that's the thing, Skype sucked, like, and we just all needed to admit that. We just needed to admit that Skype sucked, okay? And when somebody came out with something better, that's what we started using. But the thing about Skype, I don't think Microsoft actually tried to improve it, to be perfectly honest with you.
I didn't notice any changes.
Because I'm pretty sure they took the Skype team and had them build Teams. That's what they did with them.
That's what you do is you look at the product and say, this sucks. Let's build it from the ground up and let's make it what we want it to be. And I mean, that was, you know, sort of the, you know, at the dawn of the productivity apps, if you will, you know, when you had like Slack starting to come out and whatnot. So yeah, it's.
So I'm looking at Nick here and I could tell that he's just like grinning from ear to ear, but you know, what I'm seeing is him covered by his entire huge mic. And it's like, you know, it's kind of like every day at the grocery store, like he's got a mask on, you know, but like, what were you smirking about? Yeah, what were you smirking about just like, I don't know, a few minutes ago?
Because I just feel like Microsoft, like, I mean, I was joking earlier that they suck at naming things, but I feel like, especially with like the Office productivity stuff, like every few years they're renaming and reconfiguring things. Like, you're absolutely right about how difficult it can be to walk somebody through some of those portals as far as where to go and where things are. And to a certain degree, like, yeah, they are trying to improve usability and whatnot. And I don't know if they always hit that mark, but... You know, I mean, there are certain conventions, like, you know, like the start menu. They started fucking around with the start menu for no reason. And you're going to say there's a reason, Jared. You know, you look like you're going to say, yeah, they needed to mess with the start menu.
I'm a start menu. I you mean the Windows 8 start menu?
Yeah.
Well, I am a Windows 8 start menu defender. Yes, sir.
New intro.
I wish I was on video.
New intro.
I wish that should have been. That would have been great if it's a video podcast. Because I just saluted. But I am a staunch Windows 8 start menu defender because Microsoft thought the people had evolved more. And, you know, oh, well, they're not actually hitting the start button. They're using the Windows key their start button. Because that once you started doing that, once you started using the Windows key to hit your start button, that completely changes the way.
No, I never touched the Windows key.
See, I use the Windows key now.
If I wanted to do that, I'd get a Mac and hit the Apple key all the time.
Bro, see, I am with Jared because I love that I could have my apps.
You come on my show using my government name? Whoa. Whoa.
I'm with Jaw.
Whoa.
Now I can have all of my apps right there instead of having this wall of icons that I could never find what I need. And then when I do one wrong thing, they all reorganize. And I'm like, damn it. I had these all in the perfect shaped like a dick. And now they're all fucked up.
Dude, I have not touched the start menu button in years.
Same.
Years. Because you know what I do when I'm looking for a program? I hit the start menu button and I just type the name of the program or the starting name of the program and hit enter and it opens.
Same.
What are you barbarians doing out there?
Well, and actually, now you could also the only times I do hit the start menu button is when I right click and there's a whole bunch of
context.
great options to amuse there. So that's one thing I think Microsoft actually did good.
Yeah. So back to what you were saying, Nick.
I still think they're going to change shit for no reason.
Y'all made some good points, but no. I'm sticking with it.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on. And let's talk about World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft players are confused and angry at Blizzard for removing options for purchasing game time. And this is an article from PC Gamer says, Blizzard just announced some significant changes to how World of Warcraft players can purchase game time, and players aren't happy about it. In a forum post, WoW community manager Bornak, is that correct, Nick?
Sounds
Bornak,
right.
Broke the news that going forward, players would only be able to purchase game time for World of Warcraft in increments of 60 days. Meaning that you can no longer make a one-time purchase for 30, 90, and 180 days of World of Warcraft game time. To be clear, this doesn't affect World of Warcraft subscriptions, which can still be purchased on a recurring monthly basis or in increments of 90 and 180 days. Those subscriptions are probably the most common way to access World of Warcraft. Many players prefer to buy the game time as one-off purchase. It's a great option if you don't play consistently, as you can just buy a little bit of game time whenever you need it, rather than committing to a monthly fee that potentially gets wasted. Purchasing game time like this is also preferable to a lot of players in different countries where credit cards are not always a common payment method. At the end of the day, though, it's just nice to have more options for how you pay. I don't have a dog in this fight.
You have a dog somewhere else, but I was telling Bob in the pre-show, I was like, I hate when Blizzard does something that when the Warcraft team does something that causes me to have to talk about Warcraft on this show, because it's never good. It's not like, oh, you know, like exciting news about WoW. It's like, oh, I gotta either defend Blizzard or attack Blizzard. And yeah, like the community, ostensibly the reason people can sort of figure that Blizzard is doing this is because they want to increase the number of monthly subscribers, or at least the subscriber numbers, that now if you're in for 1 month, you're in for 2 months, it's harder for you to bail out. Part of the problem right now with retail is that there are concerns about when the next patch is coming. I heard it's supposed to be coming in May, although I've seen a lot of people saying it's not coming till August, which if it's not coming till August, that's almost 9 months between since we had the expansion release, which is a long time to go between patches. And I know that they're working on this at home and whatnot, so I mean, there's probably extenuating circumstances, but this is sort of Warlords of Draenor territory, which is the last time that WoW was really suffering from a lack of content and community burnout. So that's not good, and I could see them trying to do some move like this to shore up the subscriber base a little bit. In that, you know, if you're in for 1 month, you're in for 2 months, it's harder for you to just bail at any given time. There's a lot of people out there, at least based on my Twitter feed, there's a lot of people out there who were looking forward to just paying 1 month at a time. They don't want to be stuck in that subscription loop where you are paying and then you forget that you're paying. And this is how I always cancel my subscriptions for WoW. The few times that I've done that is I'm like, oh, I haven't played that game in like 3 months yet. I've been paying for it for those 3 months. I should probably bail. So, you know, they want to be more proactive about making sure that they're paying. They want to make sure, like, okay, I'll buy my time. I'll pay for the 30 days. If I'm still good, I'll pay for the next 30 days. Maybe I have a week or two where I'm not going to play, and then I'll buy again. You know, they want to get involved that way. So there's a lot of arguments for that, and it's just unfortunate. And right now, especially too, as I said, with a lot of the content, I don't want to say we're in a content drought, but it feels like there's just a lot of wariness with retail right now. And I know you've been very hyped about Classic, as we talked about earlier with Burning Crusade, which unfortunately at this point is only in beta. We don't have any, actually, no, we do have a rough idea. Didn't they data mine recently? Something about like May 18th?
Yeah, we have a data mine of pre-patch day as May 18th, but it could just be a placeholder. We don't know, but I mean, it's, like, Classic itself, with people raiding Naxx, is still going strong for the end of an expansion. I mean, we're still raiding every week. I think people that play retail, and this is just what my guess is, and knowing a lot of people that play retail, knowing a lot of retail content creators, but they like to get into that first storyline thing because it's become like a very big story game. You know, you're doing quests where you're involved in the story. You're like the hero of the story. And there's a lot of cinematics and stuff that I think it takes a lot of time for them to do. Like, you know, Taron Gregory makes great, you know, great movies and great storylines. And that's something I still love about the current retail World of Warcraft. I watch all of those. You know, I don't play, but I watch them. And I think a lot of people still want to play it, but they don't want to play the game 24/7. And, you know, I've heard a lot of bad things about PvP now and stuff too, where people aren't really into the PvP and they keep kind of changing things. Like, I heard Warrior got this crazy buff recently and it's caused all kinds of problems. But I think people just want to jump in for that part and jump out, and they don't want to pay, and they want to just, you know, play that 30 days, and then that's enough time for them to do the stuff they want to do in the new patch, and then they want to just lapse until the next one comes out. And I get that. I mean, it makes sense with the way it's going.
Well, have you heard anything? Because, I mean, the subscription for retail is the same subscription for Classic. You get access to both when you're paying. Yep. And so have you heard anything from anybody in the Classic community that was relying or using the 30-day pay-as-you-go option heavily that they're disappointed by this?
No, I haven't heard anything.
I mean, wonder,
we're going to be raiding every week, you know, but I don't know, you know, personally, I don't know a ton of people that just come in, because there's not anything like that in Classic. Like, you're not coming back for a story. Now, people will lapse sometimes and quit and then come back when like a new raid dungeon comes out, but I don't know that they really care about this. But I haven't talked to them. Like, it's very possible they do, but I think it's much less of a group of people.
Because I wonder, like kind of what you're alluding to is that, like, we know the commitment that Classic is, and we know if you're in Classic, you want to be in Classic. You know, it's not like you're unsure what the roadmap is or what the product's going to be. I mean, yes, there are some slight modifications that they're making to the game and whatnot, but overall, you know, you're getting what you expect to get for the most part.
You actually make a really good point that I didn't bring up. Since we do know what's coming, like right now, nobody wants to quit waiting for TBC. We want to get everything we can in the old world to prep for TBC to make everything more fluid and easy. So I think it's honestly less of a problem because we do know what's coming out. We do know what consumes we're going to need, what different things we're going to need to work up different professions. And so it actually incentivizes us more to play. That's a really good point that I hadn't thought of.
Well, and I think the side effect of that then is that you're not like, unless you have a pressing financial situation, like you're probably subscribed beyond just the regular $15 a month subscription. I mean, I know me being a content creator for WoW, I'm on the 6 month, and you save like, it's like $13 a month. I save $2 a month basically plan, because I know in the next 6 months, unless something really drastic happens, I'm not canceling my sub. I'm not going to be bailing on the game in any way. And yep. I'm comfortable with that. And it makes sense because I'm saving money that way. But I also have the luxury of knowing that, like, I have a steady job. I can pay for that, fee when it rolls around. I'm not, scrounging month to month, especially in this economy where a lot of people are struggling, suddenly having to be like, that one hobby that was only $15 a month. Yes, you're front loading a little bit. It's still $15 a month, but you have to pay $30 up front instead of the 15. That first month can be tough. And I suppose worst case scenario, you have to squirrel your $15 away and then wait till the next month when you can pay the 30, and then you're kind of good to go from there, and you just have to budget appropriately. But if you're hard up for money or whatever, or especially too, as I said, people don't want the burden of being in the subscription and then Blizzard's taking that money on a regular, they want to have more control over when they pay them. And yeah, it's disappointing, and I can see why people are doing this. And I have to assume that somebody at Blizzard crunched the numbers, that they looked at their subscribers and they looked at their profiles and they said, okay, like if we make this move, yes, we're going to lose X number of people who are paying month to month and they're not going to be happy about it, or they're not going to be able to make those payments. But overall, the number of subscribers will be retained because we're going to have those extra people who would normally only pay for 1 month, and they're going to wind up getting two, and we're going to have them hooked for that extra month. That, I have to assume somebody crunched the numbers and this made sense to them, because right now when I look on the forums, when I look on Twitter, when I look on Reddit, nobody's happy with this decision. Because yep. why would any player be happy with a decision where they're taking agency away from you? And it's, I feel bad for Bornak that he's the guy, the bearer of bad news. I mean, he obviously didn't make this decision, but it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
For those audio listeners that don't know, John was just not even at his computer desk the entire conversation.
Yeah, I just kind of let that topic go. I had to go take care of something else, because Warcraft, I'm out of here.
Well, you're gonna have to listen to it in post.
Yes, I will. So but yeah, let's go ahead and move on. I hope you guys got everything you need to get out about that. But
yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I did not, and you can hear more about this tomorrow on WoW Talk.
Yeah, so Reggie Phil's aim, actually, that's not how you pronounce his last name. How do you pronounce his last name?
Larry Hrib?
No, Reggie. Reggie. I always say Phil Ames, but that's not his last name.
No, isn't it Phil's name? I don't know.
It's Phil's aim, I think. That's, I say Phil Ames.
Oh, yeah, Phil's, that's aim. Not how you say it.
Yeah. So, Reggie Phil's aim is leaving the GameStop board. And this is an article from GamesIndustry.biz. GameStop has revealed that several members of its board will part ways with the retailer later this year, including Nintendo legend Reggie Phil's aim. A SEC filing shows the company currently expects 8 incumbent directors to retire from the board at its 2021 annual meeting, which is expected to take place on or around June 10th. Among departing directors is former Nintendo America president Reginald Reggie Phil's aim. former Walmart U.S. CEO Bill William Simon and PetSmart president and CEO James J.K. Simak. He's not important. We'll probably never talk to him about him after this again, so I'm not even going to try. So according to the filing, what?
Sorry, I cut you off before you were done.
According to the filing, the GameStop board has not determined the definitive slate of nominees for election when it comes to replacement candidates. The retailer noted, turnover among our board may disrupt our operations, our strategic focus, or our ability to drive stockholder value if we fail to attract and retain new skilled personnel for our board. Our business and growth prospects could disrupt our operations and have material adverse effect on our operation and business.
That's like saying, like, I don't know, like I'm in a car with no steering wheel and like the gas pedal's stuck down, and you know, like I'm changing out like the radio, and this might affect my ability to control the car. Like, no, the car's going on its own because you have no steering wheel for your stock price. Like, I don't even know. Did this even affect their stock price? Like, did it go up? Did it go down? Does it matter? Because I mean, they're on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. Who cares what their stock price is?
Well, I was going to say, like, Reggie's leaving GameStop, boys. And GameStop back on the menu.
Did he do anything while he was there? Like, did we, like,
I don't know if he actually did anything, but we're going to attribute everything that good that GameStop has done since he's been there to him.
Take down capitalism? All right.
Yeah.
We should have a moment of silence for GameStop because they're going to be gone. I mean, have you went into a GameStop as of late? It's just this cluster of crap everywhere. You can't see one bit of wall in the entire store, and you're just overwhelmed with just crap everywhere.
You know, the problem, because this ties directly back to the PS3 store being shut down. Like, you know, you said earlier, like, you know, since the Xbox One came out, you haven't bought any physical games. And, you know, GameStop, you know, literally is a monument to all of those physical games that we used to rely on. I mean, like, you know, like you said, Jarrett, like you still have your PS2 working somewhere. You can go take those discs, put them in there, and barring any kind of scratches or any like normal wear and tear, like everything should still work. And, you know, we're not just losing the PS3 store. We're losing GameStop. It's, you know, it kind of sucks. It's, I mean, you know, we don't think of these things. I mean, especially what the PS3 coming out now, like 12, 13 years, 14 years ago. I don't even know how long it's been, but it's been quite a while. And, you know, we don't think of it at the time like, oh yeah, you know, backwards compatibility, yay, nay, you know, we're going to lose access to this stuff. And GameStop's not even going to be there for us to be like, oh, maybe we can go find some crappy working, you know, PlayStation console. And who knows what's going to be on there? Because at this point, that's like a treasure trove. You know, you get the PS3 and you're finding all the games that they downloaded on there.
But I mean, GameStop's not going to have a PS3 there. They're not going to have a Nintendo 64. Now, do you guys have vintage stock over there at the East Coast? We have stores called vintage stock here in the Midwest here, and it's literally just a museum you can go to, and you could buy a TurboGrafx 16 if they have one. It's like a old video game pawn shop is basically what it is. But GameSpot doesn't have all of those old games. They've got the newer stuff.
I'll admit, I wasn't looking for the console itself. But I did go to a GameStop before the pandemic, so like late 2019, and I did buy some hardware for my Wii. Like, they had some extra controllers, they had some stuff. So I don't know, and admittedly this was like, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago now, so I don't know if they would still have that in stock. But, you know, they did have that there because, you know, I've been playing the Wii with the kid, and, you know, I need more controllers. And what is it today? The 1-year-old. I don't know how he did this. He managed to get the Wii controller open, took out the rechargeable battery, and threw it at the 5-year-old. And, like, and I'm like one, like, don't do that. But I'm thinking, like, that's impressive for a 1-year-old to like know how to do all. But yeah, but no, they did have some of that stuff there. So I mean, and maybe that's GameStop's way out of this. Is they should turn into a vintage stock, and they should lean into, hey, if you're worried about losing all these PS3 games, let's see if we can, you know, try to get as many of them as possible. I know some of the PS3 stuff might be, you know, download only, and you're kind of, you know, SOL on that. But, you know, yeah, if you're, you know, yeah, we've got PS3s and stuff. I don't know where they're going to find them. They might have to, you know, change their business model to do that. But that's one way as a you know, a brick and mortar store worried about that. You know, if you want to offer that service, that might be a service they can offer going forward.
Nick, nobody's going to care when GameStop dies. They're way past. Dude.
GameStop will not die. I figured this out. Microsoft is going to buy Discord in a GameStop. GameStop gets the kickback, and off that $10 billion, they got enough to keep going.
You know, they wouldn't be about, like, so Microsoft has Microsoft stores now. They could have an Xbox store, Nick. They could turn GameStops into Xbox stores.
There you go.
They could do that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess they don't have Xbox stores, but they have Microsoft stores that are all over Microsoft the place.
Microsoft stores, yeah. But they could turn them into Xbox stores, centers for gaming. Look at that. But yeah, I mean, GameStop, nobody's going to care. I am not going to shed a tear when fucking GameStop dies. They did this to themselves.
No, you're right. I think you're right. No one's going to care. And I guess my point is maybe we should, that we're losing, like this is all tied together. Like, we're losing the entire, like, generation of gaming from, like, 2010 prior is all going away because we're all digital all the time now. And we only care about our PS4s and our PS5s and whatnot. And our PS4s are on the way out. They're dying.
Argument they're going away. That GameStop is the reason we lost our awesome stores like Electronics Boutique, Babbage's, like all these different cool like shops that didn't try to force every freaking thing down your throat like GameStop did when they came in. GameStop is the bad guy, Nick.
They are the bad guy. And you sitting there in my face acting like Best Buy and Target don't exist. You know? I stopped shopping at GameStop a long time ago. You know why? Because you know how you'd always go to a GameStop and they wouldn't have your game in stock, but they'd have like a used copy. That shit was on purpose. They would only get so many new copies based on how many pre-orders they got. So they would get the pre-orders plus, like, I don't know, maybe a percentage of the pre-orders. And other than that, they didn't have any new ones. Next, you know, but like, you go there, you couldn't get a new game. You walk across the street to a Best Buy, they have so many.
Oh, and they would try and force those pre-orders down your freaking throat all day. And I mean, I used to enjoy going into an Electronics Boutique. I still enjoy going in and talking to employees at Best Buy. But I stopped enjoying, you know, that was a huge thing for those types of stores. I'd go in and we would shoot the shit and enjoy talking with someone else who had the same hobby and the same love for games. And GameStop just killed that with their training.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I applied to the Electronics Boutique at our local mall twice, 2 years in a row.
I worked
never got
there.
Hired. So fuck Electronics Boutique. They wouldn't hire me. Fuck them.
I worked at Electronics Boutique in Mission Mall right outside Kansas City. And it was one of the most glorious like jobs I had ever gotten when I was 17 years old. It was fantastic.
It looked fantastic. And I
it was like everybody wanted to work either an Electronic Boutique, which that became EB Games, by the way, or Software Etc. Mm-hmm. If you guys remember those.
Software Etc.
I'm pretty sure EB bought Software Etc. Or did they rename to Software Etc.? I'm pretty sure EB bought Software Etc. But yeah, you know, stuff like that. But then, you know, like, when you were working there, Bob, I'm sure it was fine. But then, yeah, like, because Ray, she used to be a manager at a game. Actually, I met her because I was working at Sears at the time, and I would go downstairs into the mall, and I would go over to the EB Games and look around, and that's how I met Ray from Wild Talk. That's how we met, you know? So
I worked there for 8 months, and I could tell you the only thing I can remember time-wise, I can't remember the date, but it was I was working there when the Nintendo 64 came out because right. The games were like $80 at the start.
I remember like 96.
Everybody like bitching about it. It was either $80 or $90 for a new game, and people were just losing their shit about it. But yeah, that was when I worked there. But sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. But like everything that's happened to them, they did to themselves. They did the whole thing with the pre-orders and not having enough games in stock. Oh, I can go to Target and get the game right now. You know, that killed the midnight release thing. And also, even the pre-owned games thing, right? I remember it might have been 2011, either 2011 or 2012, where GameStop had a massive, massive like profit because of pre-used games. You know?
Yeah, because when I worked at Electronics Boutique, we didn't even like buy games. Like we didn't sell like pre-owned
Funko
games.
Funko Land started that.
Funko Land. Oh my gosh, I had forgotten about them.
I forget who bought Funko Land, but somebody bought Funko Land. They bought Software, etc. I'm pretty sure. Maybe I think it might have been Electronic Boutique might have bought Funko Land, and I think GameStop bought Software, etc., and Electronic Boutique bought Funko Land, or the other way around. But so, like, somebody absorbed somebody, and then finally GameStop absorbed EB, you know? But there was one year where, it's either 2011 or 2012, where GameStop had a massive profit from pre-owned games. And Best Buy was like, oh, word? And Target was like, oh, yeah? And then they started doing it. And
Best Buy's pre-owned game system was so bad.
It gives you more money than fucking GameStop's.
Yeah, but it was
find a $20 on the street, it would give you more money than GameStop. I mean,
like that's what the GameStop did do well, is they did categorize and have like a way to get the game you wanted pretty easy, whereas Best Buy would just like repackage the game and put it on a shelf, and you'd have to search through hundreds of titles, you know, to try and find the game you wanted. They were trying to do it to catch up, and it was kind of a shit show in the sense that you just really couldn't find anything you wanted. At GameStop, you could ask one person and be like, hey, do you have it at any other store? And like that's one thing they did do well. They would call around. They would have databases and be like, it looks like there's two at the store on blah, blah, blah. And then you just kind of turn into like a Pokemon Go type of situation where you're driving around to catch them all, you know?
Dude, like, I wasn't the one buying the pre-owned games. I didn't give a fuck. I just wanted to sell mine back at a high price.
The trick for that is you buy new, and then you beat it within 5 days and then sell it back. That was the trick early on.
Oh, well, at half price, it's not even worth it.
Well, I mean, titles, you would get a good, like, 70% back early on. It was later on that they realized they didn't have to give you that.
You used to be able to return the full game within 5 days open. You used to be able to return the full game.
Yeah, I'm not proud of doing that early on, but, you know.
No. Oh, I've seen people do worse. I've seen people buy a game, then they will beat it, right? Like, they'll have it for months and beat it. Then go buy the game from Walmart, so it's still sealed and closed. Bring the sealed game back to, a Best Buy or something like that, and take the open game back to Walmart, because they used to give you full cash back for it.
Yeah, they would give you it. I actually did this quite a bit too. Like, you and like if you had already used you, it was like you could make one return within 6 months with one driver's license. And so I would go and return something, and then the next time I'd be like, "Hey, Jerry, can you go use your license to return this for me?" I did the same exact thing.
Yep. So they shut that down too. But I just want, like I said, I was just interested in returning, getting games I wasn't playing anymore. That's the most money I can get for them, essentially. So, yeah, but I think it's going to be it for us. We're actually a bit over with that. I didn't expect that GameStop one to take us over like that, but shit, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, well, we're saying pre-show, we ain't got a lot.
Yeah, we ain't got a lot.
You brought me on the show. I just run long. It's what I do, you know. My hour long show that I started is now a 2 hour show every week.
All right. Well, that's what happens when we just start reminiscing about the old days.
Damn right.
gotta let the youth know, even though I'm pretty sure everybody listens to this show is around our age. So
I feel like we should record this all sitting in our rocking chairs.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a good time, so thank you.
Yeah. No problem. Thanks for coming. Yeah, we're going to start wrapping up here. Let's see what's coming up this week on the Mash Those Buttons Network. We have a new Warcraft Reloaded. That's Bob's show. New Ready Room, but I believe this is actually going to be the last Ready Room they're doing. So there will be no more Ready Rooms after this. We're going to have a new episode of Push the Point. This is part two of the season previews. We're going to have a new double tap for the fighting game community. A new WoW talk, so you'll get to hear Nick again.
Yeah.
A new Dropping Spicy. A new Night City story, so me and Bob are on that show together. You'll hear us there. And then, yeah, that's going to be it for the week. So I'd like to thank you guys for listening. If you want to follow the show and you know, keep up what's going on with the Mashless Button Show and the Mashless Buttons Network, you can follow us at twitter.com/TheMash Network. Bob, watch them where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at @Blazin_Bob. That's BLAZZIN_BOB.
And Nick?
I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me here on the Mash Those Buttons Network on WoW Talk, as Jarrett said, where this week we'll be talking about that Blizzard changing the game type subscription stuff, as we mentioned. Also, I'm on the Torn and the Goblin, talking about Warcraft story and lore. And also, I'm here. So, yeah, that's where you can find me.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/JoshDomich. Go also find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/ChurchOfJah. And then, like I said earlier, you can find me on our other show that we're recording right now, Night City Stories, me, Bob, and Big Juicy Hog, still going through Cyberpunk 2077. So catch us there on Thursday. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you can also reach out to us on Discord, which is at mash.gg/Discord. And yeah, you can join our community there. We'd love to have you. And I encourage you to reach out to us with comments and questions. So like I said, Discord is fine. You can reach out to us on Twitter, or you can just shoot us an email at contact@mash.gg. If you enjoy the show, you want to help us out, one of the best ways to do that is to share the show with others and also rate and review the show on your favorite podcast platform of choice. And you can also, if you want to take support a bit further, you can visit mtb.gg/support, and you can see all the ways you can help support Mash Those Buttons. For example, we do have a Patreon, which is at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. And, you know, you can help support Mash Those Buttons with tiers starting at $1 a month and gain early access to content as well as exclusive content. We have a Teespring store at teespring.com/store/mashthosebuttons where you can get some merch. And we're going to be refreshing that sometime in the future. We do have Twitch subscriptions at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons. There's Humble Bundle affiliate links and even a one-time PayPal donation. So there's a couple different ways that you can help support the network if you feel inclined to do so. And I encourage you guys to stay tuned after the show to hear more about Mash Those Buttons. And with that, we are done for the night. Thank you guys very much. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/TheMashNetwork, facebook.com/MashThoseButtons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/Discord.